Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill. So today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have Zamboni Funk for a year ahead forecast. We're going to look at 2024. We're going to take a deep dive into the Q1, the winter season quarter. And yeah, we're going to talk about what's going on in the astral weather. So Zamboni, how are you doing? How's your year been?
I'm doing good. I think that it's maybe inappropriate to introduce me and not introduce the third member of the plant cutting team.
Yeah. Yes, this is Persimmon.
Who is this here?
This is Percy.
Yeah, Persimmon. He's sugar plum. It's our little puppy. We just got a new little puppy.
He's very sweet and cute and
he's
small.
He's the cutest man that has ever lived.
We just love him.
Yes, he's an excellent puppy.
Yeah. Thanks, Zamboni, for bringing Persimmon in.
Well, it was simply the only option.
Yeah, you're right.
So
We're really excited to chat with you about the astrology of the year ahead today. So yeah, well, thank you for doing this with us.
Yeah, what a delight it is to be here again. I'm excited to do it. I love bringing difficult news to the audience. So
yes, you deliver it so well. Yeah, so we appreciate your delivery. So yeah, we can dive right into it, I guess, right?
Well, Zamboni hasn't answered how his year's been, he's been doing though.
Yeah, how have you
been? Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty good year. It's been a good year. Artistically, it's been a strong year for me. Last year in 2022, I was sitting in the weed man's car. And I don't know if you've ever gotten into the weed man's car before, but yeah. Traditionally, you're supposed to spend a little minute in there so it doesn't look like anything sus has been taking place. So you sit in there, hang out for a little while. We like make a little conversation and he's like, all right, fine. I'll put your music on, whatever. And so he presses play on it. And the first thing that happens was he went, oh, snap, and turned it up. I was like, oh, okay. And then immediately went to the Spotify page and started looking. It was like, where's the rest of it? And it was only one song out at that time. And So I was like, oh no, what am I gonna? So I put my nose to the grindstone, and in 2023, I released 10 songs. So now there are 11 that are available. So it's been a strong year. I did a breath exercise and did a whole video to go with that. And we did a live recording. We did a video for that. And So musically, it's been a really fun and exciting year, and I've made some things that I'm really proud of. I got to come out to upstate to New York to hang out with y'all for a little while, and had a lovely time doing that. And yeah, so it's been a time. I've made some stuff. I have a whole year is a lot can happen in a year. So a lot did happen this year, and you know we. In the immortal words of Juicy J, the hustle continues.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
cool. True. Yeah, and it was really awesome to get to meet you in person, and that you were able to be out here for the first ever Plant Cunning Conference. It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It was our first one, and it turned out really good. And it was a blessing that you were able to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait for the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
September 13th is what I heard.
That's
word on the street.
Looking like the astrology is really good for it, so we still have to confirm some stuff, but that's what we're aiming for. And also 10 songs, that's great. You know, that's a full album pretty much. We're full, you know,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's an accomplishment for sure. So congratulations on that.
It's really cool.
Yeah, my first time rapping on record, all that.
Sweet.
Cool. So What's the bad news?
Yeah, sure. So I figured the way that we will do this is we'll do some broad strokes, a general overview of 2024, like the kind of major things that are going to be happening. So we probably aren't going to talk about all every time that the sun changes signs or every Mercury retrograde that happens or this kind of thing. But we'll talk about, we'll sort of just touch on the big things that are happening. And then we will sort of zoom in on the first quarter and see what's going on from the winter solstice to the spring equinox. So with that in mind, one of the main things that I notice about 2024 is how very heavy it is on Mars, and not only Mars, but Mars-Pluto.
Seeing configuration.
Yeah. There's definitely the big Scorpio stuff going on, without a doubt. There's the Scorpio things are sort of, you know, I was looking at some of the lunations that are going on in Scorpio and was kind of excited about them because they're not eclipsed anymore. And so I was like, yeah, we're going to get like moons in Scorpio now. But then I looked at them and I was like, I don't like these moons in Scorpio very much because they're ruled by Mars and Mars is up to some bullshit all year. And not only Mars, but Mars is hanging out with Pluto a bunch this year. There's a big Mars Saturn conjunction that only happens every 2 years, but is a pretty big deal. The last time we saw a Mars Pluto or a Mars Saturn conjunction, we had a whole moment in geopolitics that has been pretty ugly a few times over now. So yeah, really, to my mind, we're very much looking at Mars dynamics throughout the year and getting comfortable or getting acquainted with that. I don't think one ever really gets comfortable with Mars, but becoming well acquainted with Mars and sort of doing what we can do to navigate Mars dynamics, I think, is like the primary thing that we've got going on this year. How about you? What do you think about the year we've got going on here?
Well, I think as an overview, it's like we're really setting things up for 2025, I believe, and it kind of like things are really starting to take off at the end of 2024. But we have an election year. You know, that's always a big year.
True, indeed.
We have this big eclipse. The sun eclipse, the great American eclipse in April, which is in a Mars sign. And I was saying Scorpionic because in modern rulership, Scorpio is co-ruled by Pluto, and we have a lot of Pluto and Mars together. So that's really, we got the war, we have the aggression, we have that masculine energy, but with this, also this, the transformative aspects of Mars, because we with the Scorpio and transformation and transmutation, but also the underworld and like underworld transformations of Pluto and the death energy. We have also this that Mars is conjoining Saturn. That's a death yoga in Vedic astrology. So there's a lot of kind of dark, shadowy energy this year, and it's definitely not looking great, but at the same time 2025 is I mean it's
yeah, you said that we're on a crescendo to 2025. Will you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so we've got all of these big planets are changing signs. So in this year, 2024, we're having Pluto change to go into Aquarius for good. And then we're going to have Neptune and Uranus also changing signs. And the Uranus changing signs going into Gemini is going to be, I mean, this is a little bit off. It's not in this year, but that, as many folks know, there's a big relationship between Uranus and Gemini and the America and wars and revolutions and how America's is, how it sees itself, how what its outer face is, you know. So Uranus was in Gemini in the Revolutionary War, when America was founded, when the U.S. was founded, the Civil War and World War II. So that's the kind of situation we've got going on, that's we're leading up to. So I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but and you can see this just in terms of the politics that are happening right now. Seems to me like the elite class is in need of a reboot. That's just going to happen one way or the other. I mean, we have the two most despised presidents and presidential candidates, you know, ever. And it's an election year. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Trump Clinton was about the same, but it's like, this is the elite class that we've got to work with. They've run out of ideas and there's going to be some major changes in terms of what the US is in the near future. Mm-hmm. And not to mention everything else happening in the world. So at large, that's kind of like what I see, you know, what's happening in 2025, 2026 and so on. But that's the way I see, like, this is kind of like leading up to that situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So 2025, we're going to see outer planets changing signs more or less at the same time. And that significantly reconfiguring the background dynamics of how we exist in the world at large. Yeah. So this idea that we are moving up or moving toward that in 2024, I think resonates in a pretty major way. 2024 looks like it's a fairly disruptive kind of year. There's a lot of chaos to be had. There's a lot of, you know, like things being kind of shifty in some ways. So should we just like talk about some of the things that we're seeing here and look at them a little bit? So one thing that I think is important here to think with is that we begin the year January 1st with a Mercury retrograde in Sagittarius, and that Mercury retrograde in Sagittarius is about to station, and it's right there with Mars, who is there in Sagittarius. So first thing right out the gate, we've got Mercury Mars dynamics, and we've got Mercury in Sagittarius. Mercury's not super comfortable in Sagittarius. You know, like a Mercury in Sagittarius, it might be like a little oversharey, right? Like has a lot to say and maybe says a little too much or something like this, right? Mercury is as far away from home as possible in Sagittarius, isn't super comfortable here, but gets a little chatty with things, right? So that's Mercury in Sagittarius. Mercury with Mars tends to be fighting words or angry communications or, you know, things that are incisive or things that are divisive or this kind of speech that is divisive, and this sort of stuff happens a lot under this kind of configuration. So at the very beginning of the year, we've got this situation where Mars and Mercury are together, and we see that a lot going on throughout the year. So after we've got the Mercury station there in Sagittarius, then Mars is going to move into Capricorn, which is a very strong position for Mars. Mm-hmm. And Mars is exalted there in Capricorn, very good at doing the Mars things. And so the good news there is if you have New Year's resolutions, or especially New Year's resolutions around activity or exercise or these kinds of things, then there's good like momentum for that. Right. But then as a little later, after Mars moves into Capricorn, then Mercury moves right into Capricorn, and we've got more Mars Mercury dynamics, and it's a very strong Mars, and Mercury is just kind of regular size Mercury there. Right. So Mars is totally dominating that Mercury. And so it looks like all of the Mercury things are going to be Marsy throughout much of the beginning of the year. Then something that I think is really interesting is that on January 20th, the Sun is going to conjoin Pluto. Now, with an outer planet, I don't know if you can call it a Kazemi or not. Kazemi is a term that predates telescopes, so it's hard to say whether or not we would call that a Kazemi. But what I think is really interesting here is that as the Sun moves from Capricorn into Aquarius, so too does Pluto move from Capricorn into Aquarius. And so we get this major conjunction at the very end of Capricorn and the beginning of Aquarius. Now that's particularly interesting because we've seen this a few times, especially at 0 degrees of Aquarius. There's been a lot of stuff going on in that space. That's where we had the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, which ushered in a whole new era where we're now in the era of air rather than the era of Earth, which we've talked about on previous podcasts. We saw a Mars-Saturn conjunction there. There was a Mercury Kazemi, I think at 2 degrees of Aquarius earlier in the year this year. There's been, so this, you know, it's not the age of Aquarius in the sense of like, this is the dawning of the age, right? Like that's not where we are necessarily, but it seems like the Aquarius things are very important here. In the dawning of this new era, this 200-year era of constructing reality based on Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions in air signs that sort of speak to communications and transportation and ideas and this sort of stuff. The information age, absolutely. So as we move into that, then the Aquarius things, and especially the first decan Aquarius things, especially the 0 degrees Aquarius things, seem to be really, really important in how we move into.
What are those things? Sorry.
Sure.
Just asking the novice questions to y'all.
No, yeah, that's totally right. Totally the right thing to do. So Aquarius is ruled by Saturn. So we can do our Saturn things there all day, right? So we can think about Saturn as being associated with borders or boundaries or, you know, so people, what I've heard a lot is, so Saturn rules two signs. One of them is Capricorn, one of them is Aquarius. And if Saturn is the boundary or the wall, then Capricorn is what's inside of the wall, inside the castle. This represents tradition and antiquity and conservatism. And then there's Saturn, which is the wall, and Aquarius is on the other side of the wall. It's the outside. It's the exterior. So there might be some things that are associated with foreign things or things that are maybe outside the realm of what you know specifically. Like, so if you've got a spotlight and there's only so much light, right? And then outside of that is all of the darkness that there ever was. And so there's something there. So, you know, we're in a moment where there's a lot of talk about UFOs. Are aliens real? How long have we been in contact with aliens? Like all type of stuff like this, right? There's a lot of uncertainty and unknowability in that sort of space. That's a good example here. Yes.
I also wanted to bring up the point that for the modern rulerships, Aquarius is ruled by Uranus. And that kind of goes along with the outside of the walls, because Uranus is the outsider, it's the eccentric, it's the revolutionary. Mm-hmm. And those are keywords that definitely have to do with Aquarius. And then in Vedic, the sidereal Aquarius is also ruled by Rahu, the north node, mm-hmm. who is also about kind of eccentricity and foreignness and obsession, fusion. So I see all these kind of keywords as playing a part with this, but also Aquarius is the water holding storage facility. You know, it's like the water tower, or it's the reservoir, because Aquarius is the water holder, and it's this technology that stores a resource. And yeah, that's just some other ways of looking at Aquarius too. And I think this is really a big Aquarius moment, because as you were saying that, and like, because Pluto is also just coming in and out of that 0 degrees Aquarius. He's been hovering around there since last year. So this is this is a very interesting time for Aquarius. Maybe we are at the age of Aquarius, but also again, like, yeah, the age of Aquarius is not necessarily a fun time.
Yeah. Well, I think when you recognize that Aquarius is ruled by Saturn, that And I know I get the like modern rulership of Uranus. I'm not like super on team Uranus rules Aquarius.
Right, right.
I think there's a lot of Aquarius is a fixed sign, for example. And Aquarius is ruled by Saturn in the modern or in the traditional text. And so there's an idea there that things are kind of slow moving in a way that Uranus typically is not. Uranus likes the sudden breaks and the unexpected surprises and this kind of thing. And so surprises in the sense of like, surprise, Area 51 is real, you know, like perhaps, but it's not, you know, like I think Uranus is much more comfortable in a sign like Aries, for example, which likes to explode and this kind of thing.
Or Gemini. I like
Gemini.
Gemini, yes. Too. And it's kind of interesting that like Rahu also in this real sidereal Aquarius and then is exalted in Gemini.
Mm-hmm,
I feel like in the Vedic realm, the North Node, Rahu has taken a lot of has a lot of the same significations as Uranus. It just
interesting. Interesting.
The language, yeah. So, but yeah, go on.
Yeah. Well, so Aquarius things, and then like, so I mentioned the first decan of Aquarius is also. One of the things I really like the image of one of the images that is given in the Yavana Jataka for the first decan of Aquarius, which is a man with, I think he's got tan skin and clad in animal hides and knots in his hair, who sits at the edge of town, who knows how to do magic. And so there's bog witch a little bit there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's this idea of things that are outside the given domain that are maybe there's something special about that. And it's maybe a little bit stinky and weird. And we don't know if we like this guy that much. But like, if your cattle are sick, then maybe you go see him, you know, like this kind of thing. And so there's that kind of energy that wants to come through here. What's up?
Well, I just think it's also worth noting that, I mean, we're kind of that energy, like
for sure. Yeah, without a doubt.
A lot of our listeners may also resonate with that sort of on the outside of town, a little bit closer to nature, but a little bit looked on with with a little bit of a side eye by straight normies.
Until sure. Spider bite or something, and then they're like, "Let's go see their bliss."
yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree completely. I have Cancer rising, and I have the moon at 0 degrees of Aquarius. That's part of the reason why I like this image so much, because the dude with the knots in his hair, who knows how to do magic, like I fuck with this guy, you know. So that's kind of like some of the vibe that's coming, but there's been a lot of activity in that spot, right? And this is maybe important, what in the same moment that herbalism is having a bit of a renaissance and astrology is having a moment and tarot and, you know, like and the witch, you know, hashtag witch talk and all of this, like it's having a moment, even if you're not on team witch talk, right? Even if you think that that's co-opted or something like this, I don't have the stamina to have that conversation necessarily, but even if you know, no matter what you think about it, we can notice that there's a cultural moment going on. There's something going on in the zeitgeist, which is important, and including that kind of weirdness and that kind of idea of outsiderness. We've got a moment going on in history right now where there are robot prophets, and people are listening to them, and maybe they have something interesting to say. Like, how do we navigate this, you know? And the question of how to do that, and that's the line of inquiry that seems to have been opened going back to 2020. If we think back to 2020 and the Mars Saturn conjunction that we had in at 0 degrees of Aquarius at that time, and then the Jupiter Saturn conjunction that we had at 0 degrees after that, is like there's a sense of moving into a new space, which is primarily dark right now, which is primarily uncertain and unknown, and having to figure out and being kind of afraid of the dark, not knowing what's out there and being aware that it's dangerous in the dark somewhere. But here we go all the same. And so we're going to figure out how it is. And so I think that this is likely to come up in a major way throughout the year and throughout the next 20 years while Pluto is in Aquarius.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to notice that, like, that liminal space, like, this is a very liminal space, just an edge space. And it's right at that 0 degrees, that mm-hmm. edge of the sign where all this activity is taking place. I think that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Right on the border. Right. If you think about that, Saturn as being the border between inside and outside Capricorn, Aquarius, then that 29 Capricorn, 0 Aquarius is that spot. It's Humpty Dumpty, you know what I mean? Like sitting on the wall. And then, like, is there a fall coming?
Well,
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems likely.
Well, so this brings us forward a little bit, right? So if we are looking at other things that are going on in the year, right? So that Pluto is going to move into Aquarius, and it's not our last Pluto ingress into Aquarius, right? We've got Pluto moving into Aquarius, and then in September, Pluto is going to move back into Capricorn and hang out in the very end of Capricorn for a little while. And then finally, we'll see Pluto moving into Aquarius for keepsies in a little bit. But so we're going to get that. So we've got that, and then there's going to be a Mars-Pluto conjunction right there at 0 degrees of Aquarius. So Mars-Pluto, and that's in February. So we're really getting started strong in 2024. You know, like, it shit is going down first thing. Mars-Pluto is tough. Mars, so if, you know, Mars is the god of war, and Mars is, you know, like, action, excitement, passion, sweat, blood, things that are iron or, you know, like, difficult and prickly and sharp and severing and all of this kind of stuff, right? Get a lot of conflict dynamics with Mars. Then Pluto is like, I like to think about Pluto as like a magnifying glass a lot of times. It can take an image and make it much, much larger. So Pluto is associated with microscopes and telescopes and this kind of thing. Pluto is also one of my favorite images for Pluto is the funhouse mirror. So you look into the mirror and it's wavy. And so you get a weird image back at you. And that weird image might make you feel weird about how you look in your body, or it might make you feel weird about the room that you're in, or it might make you feel weird about your spatial relationships to where you are. And so there's a kind of distortion which is associated with Pluto there. So we put Mars and Pluto together, and that is like it's the magnifying glass on Mars, right? So it's all of the Mars things and then more of that. So, you know, so the last time we had a Mars Pluto hard aspect was Mars in Libra square to Pluto in Capricorn, and that was on October 7th, 2023. And so that was the same time that we had the Hamas attack in Israel and taking a bunch of hostages and all this kind of situation. Terrible, terrible situation that then also led to an even more terrible retribution that continues to be ongoing to this day. So we're going to see another development in that saga. But seeing that at 0 degrees of Aquarius really makes me think that there's something greater historically that's going on here as well. What do y'all think?
Well, yeah. I mean, Pluto is kind of that horror. And with Mars, it's the horrors of war, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And being brought into the open from the underworld in a way. So, I mean, because that when I say Pluto is the lord of the underworld and Mars is the lord of war. So this doesn't, it seems like to me gruesome. Yeah. Gruesome is a key word for that conjunction. And yeah, right there at that 0 degrees Aquarius, I'm not sure what it's going to look like. I think it probably would have something to do with the Hamas, the Israel-Palestine situation, very potentially. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if Yeah, in a way that's maybe even more intense than it has been, which is not very nice. But that's what it looks like to me from, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't look like things are easing up in that regard. And I would guess that wherever there are wartime dynamics, so we might be thinking about Eastern Europe and in Russia, or maybe we're thinking about gangs in your neighborhood, or say again?
The Congo and Sudan.
The Congo and Sudan, great point. Anywhere where there are wartime dynamics, then I would expect a magnification of that in February, which is when we've got this Mars-Pluto conjunction.
And then Mars is going through and hitting, it goes from Pluto, and then it's going to hit Saturn at exactly on the Great American Eclipse in April. And then it's going to hit Jupiter. And I think that's an arc that is telling a story too. And because Saturn and Mars is also a death yoga, a death combination. And that's happening right now at that eclipse. So there's something else, all of this is part of bigger stories, but that arc from February through April and then up to the Jupiter conjunction, I think is going to be a particular little story arc.
Yeah. Sure, sure. So there's a new moon solar eclipse in Aries on the 8th of April. And at that time, so it's important to remember that Aries is ruled by Mars. And so whatever's going on with Mars is going to be relevant to a new moon always. Whenever we've got a new moon, then whatever's going on with Mars is going to be relevant to that new moon. This new moon is conjunct the North Node and therefore an eclipse. And so it's going to be a moment where there's going to be a total eclipse, basically. I think, is it like 2 degrees away or something like this?
Total.
Yeah, it's not quite total, but like it's enough to cover the face of the sun. So we get a shadow, we get darkness where we normally would have light. And so typically whenever I think about eclipses, and I think then it's always important to remember that darkness, shadows, uncertainty are an important part of what that is. It's also good to think about a solar eclipse. So if we think about the sun as being the sovereign, the king, the ruler, the head of state, the emperor, the leadership, famous faces, celebrities show up with the sun, then a shadow cast across the face of the sun is a moment when we might see some of the power shift. People who were in leadership positions become less powerful. People who are jockeying for position might get a leg up in a moment like that, this kind of thing. So to see those dynamics, and while the ruler of the eclipse is Mars, and we've got Mars in Pisces closely conjunct Saturn in that same moment, that looks ugly. And it looks like a moment where some big fighting can take place, especially big Mars fighting war and all this, that especially the kind that can depose authorities or leaders in some kind of way.
Yeah, I think this eclipse is I think the biggest thing happening this year. It is like pretty much a total eclipse. You'll be able to see it from most of the center of the U.S. It's going to bisect the U.S. from the northeast down through Texas and into Mexico. And the last big eclipse like this we had in the U.S. was in 2017, which, yeah, it shows like the United States being divided, like literally. But I think it's also important to note that this eclipse is happening in the sun's exaltation, and it's like just a couple days before the exact degree of the sun's exaltation. I think it's like a day or two, and so it's like the sun is this exalted at the highest height of its power, really. In the entire, is when at the degree of its exaltation, and then it goes and gets eclipsed entirely. And that to me that's a really powerful image. And it's happening while the Lord of the sun, Mars, who is ruling Aries, is conjunct Saturn. forming this death combination. So, I mean, I don't want to predict anyone's death, but that people have been predicting death all, you know, that's not, not a good look, but that's a really potent moment. And we can look and see the path of the eclipse in 2017 and the path of the eclipse in 2024, and they form an X over Texas. We were talking about that before the show, and I think that is really also, like, we're talking about the division of the United States. There's all this polarization and division, and it's been splintering and splintering. So, like, somebody will agree with the one person about, like, everyone, all these people will hate Trump, and all these people will love Trump. But then that's divided between people who or anti-vaxxers and people who are pro-vaxxers. And then there's a division between people who support Palestine and people who support Israel. And there's keeps on being all these big divisions, and they're splitting and splitting. So there's no into smaller and smaller factions and fractions of the population. And a lot of people a lot of people are just keep getting drawn deeper and deeper into this. And a lot of people seem to be information overload, and they just don't care about anything anymore. So it's that's the context that we're in. And people are talking about the great American divorce that they see happening this century, the next decade or so. And if that's what we're looking at, which it seems very likely to me, I don't see the kind of active civil war that happened during the Civil War in the 1860s. I see more as a defederalization, where the states start taking more of their own power away from and operating more with their own autonomy. And that X happening in Texas, I think, is a very...
Yeah, who better to start?
Right. Yeah. Texas has its own history of being an independent country. They still think of themselves as basically a nation, as their own with their own autonomy. And so I could see something like that happening in Texas this year. And that's kind of like the getting the ball rolling in that de-federalization of the U.S. So what do you think about this eclipse and about that whole situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So the idea that Texas is a bit of a hot spot for it, I think, is a good and interesting look. I think that is, I don't know, it's interesting at least, right? Does it mean that there's going to be huge news in Texas at that time? I would guess so. But beyond that, I think part of what your point here, especially with the sun at the height of its power then being eclipsed at the same time that the sun's ruler is with Saturn. And so Saturn's job is borders, boundaries, negation, denial, saying no to things. That's one of the things that Saturn does, is be like, nah, not all that. And so to see Mars ruling the sun, running into Saturn, running into an obstacle, running into a challenge or some kind of stopping force, so we're thinking about the sun supposedly at the height of its power. So what would the sun at the height of its power be? Like, if we're thinking about an emperor or a monarch or something like this, sort of like reaching toward totalitarianism, toward autocratic power, right? Like, this is, I got this, I'm the emperor, I'm the divine incarnate, I got this, you're gonna do what I want you to do because I told you to do it, right? Sort of reaching toward that total power. And so then that being undermined by an eclipse looks like, at the same time that you run into an obstacle, that looks like a major change in the leadership structure, right? And so then, to your point there, where you were talking about the splintering of factions further and further until you get to a point where people don't care about anything anymore. I don't think that that's actually true. I don't think that people don't care about anything anymore. I think that people reach a point where they're like, I can't understand what's happening out there. And so what matters most to me is what matters most to me. So am I eating? And is my family eating? Do I have somewhere safe to and warm to shelter at night and this kind of thing, right? And so it turns into local concerns rather than looking up to the leaders and being like, oh, come save us, right?
And really good point. Really good point. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, this really speaks to your like defederalization, right? Like, or we could think about it as decentralization, right? This sense of like, whatever is going on, it's, you know, it is, I feel like people are more and more of the opinion that the highly publicized elections are shams. And so if that is the idea, if that's even whether or not that's true, I don't know if they're rigging elections and all this, like it's above my pay grade. I don't fucking know. But if that's the general understanding, if that's the thought that is taking place here, then you're likely to get disinvestment. You're likely to get people moving away from, and then you can sort of be like, okay, well, so, you know, your thing was like pro-Trump, anti-Trump, vax, anti-vax, Gaza, Israel, right? So you can, maybe you are, you know, one of those that you're pro-Trump and you're anti-vax and you're pro-Gaza or something like this, right? And then you can find the other people, especially in your immediate vicinity, who like speak to your concerns, who speak to what you think is important to you. And maybe the really clever among us will look away from those things entirely. Those are still like national, global, geopolitics scale, right? Like we might get to a point where it's like, okay, like how do we navigate whatever is actually happening here? Because grocery stores are not coming through the way that they were before or something like this. And so if there's this kind of disruption taking place, then it sort of brings us to the immediate locality rather than looking toward some kind of authoritative superstructure to lead the way, to shine the way.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of looking at it. I think that also is the point we're at, where a lot of people just don't believe that the elections are legitimate anymore on both sides of the aisle. That's I think that's also paving the way for this, the rise of what Caesarism. I mean, that basically people can look at Trump as a Caesar. But that's kind of also what we've been experiencing every time. I mean, I say we, like the United States has been experiencing every time Uranus goes into Gemini is a Caesar or a dictator, a strong leader who takes all the power. So FDR, he was in three terms of power. You know, we had in the Civil War, we had Abraham Lincoln, we had George Washington, who was in a similar position after the Revolutionary War. So that's what is likely to happen in 2025, 2026. I don't know how we're going to get there. We can look, it's really easy to look at this eclipse and say, oh, Kamala Harris is going to become president right after that eclipse. But who knows, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying that, but that like symbolically that does look something like that. But, and then also looking at Texas again, as like the canary in the coal mine, or the harbinger, or like the front edge of this decentralization, defederalization, that's already, and we see that with abortion, you know, in Texas. You know, like that's actually already happening. So, and
there's a sense of we do what we want here,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but I think that taking it down to the local level and the personal level is the reaction, and it is what happens, and it that's also what is happening too already.
So, mm-hmm. And when I was doing forecasts with Cameron and Pallas, one of the things that Pallas said that I thought was really great was thinking through like what really matters and the sort of values that we hold as people with Uranus and Taurus. And so, and seeing that those things being disrupted. And so there's a kind of radical presence that is necessary under Uranus and Taurus, and in the And not only Uranus and Taurus sort of like represents the volatility of the moment. And so in moments that are this volatile, then it's important to be like, okay, really, what matters to me, and where do I fit in this whole thing? And if I don't fit in a certain place, then maybe something needs to change. Maybe my relationship to other things need to change. Maybe I need to put myself into a different position, these kinds of things. And yeah, so it definitely looks like there are big changes in the way that leadership wants to be structured at this time. I wouldn't even say, you know, like Biden, I mean, so there are people who say that Biden is dead already, right? So, and I don't fucking know. I'm not the guy. I'm not the one who knows this kind of thing. I do think that if Biden is still alive, that which like wouldn't they get if he was dead, wouldn't they get a better actor? I don't know. But if he is still alive, then he survived eclipses on his ascendant. So I don't know that this eclipse is gonna do anybody in necessarily. As much as I think that this eclipse wants to speak to the way that leadership is structured, not any particular leader's death. And like maybe, you know, people die every day, right? So like maybe somebody important is going to die around that time. But I think that what we're looking at here is, and it's also an eclipse on the North Node. The North Node tends to do more of whatever it touches. It tends to intensify whatever is going on, right? And so if it's trying to intensify the sun's power grab for autocratic structure, while at the same time running into the opposition to that, then I wonder if there's like, you know, like there are major, without a doubt, there's major economic changes afoot. And there are some folks, you know, in the like Martin Armstrong camp, for example, who would posit that the financial center of the world, which has been in the United States in New York City, is now moving to Beijing and will be in Beijing by 2032. But the people who are currently in power don't want to see that happen. The current like, you know, Wells Fargo, the banking industry or whatever, right? BlackRock is maybe a better one to think of than Wells Fargo, but like whatever, you know, fucking banks. They don't want to see that happen. And so they're going to make a play to keep the power while the power wants to slip out away in some kind of way. Things want to break in some kind of way that lets the power go. And then there's a play to try to keep the power. And so to my mind, that's the main thing that's going on here more than any individual's death.
Yeah, I agree with you too. And also to my mind, you know, looking at it mythically, it seems like whenever that resistance to what's going to be happening to the flow, that's actually oftentimes what causes it to happen. So it's like the reaction
right.
to try to keep the center of finance in the U.S. is what ends up making sure it doesn't stay there.
mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that this is a really interesting. So one of the things that I think leads to people making bad decisions, if I could say that, if I could be so bold as to say that, is that the nature of causation is poorly understood. No one really knows why things happen. And so, but we can see that, like, you know, like it, like the manosphere wasn't a big deal until there were feminists who were so mad at them, you know? And so, and there's a certain sense of like the thing that you hate so much, you go on to create it, you yeah. know?
Well, you resist persists. And it's kind of like, ooh,
that's a better way to say it. Yeah.
I think that's an Ursula Le Guin quote, but to my mind, it was Ben Shapiro burning a Barbie.
Yeah. That's yeah. Yeah. Big.
It's like they're playing mm-hmm. their part. It's like he gets more fame because of that. Barbie movie gets more fame because everyone watches it because, you know, this dude, you know, Ben Shapiro is burning a Barbie. And, you know, it's just totally. Like It's yeah, that's the kind of situation and that I see happening with that dynamic.
For sure. So with that going on, I think that there's major changes in the power structure that's going on. And one thing that I think is likely to be of interest here and maybe a growing edge for us is, so a little bit later in the year, Jupiter is going to move into Gemini. So as Jupiter moves into Gemini, then we might get a situation where, are we cool? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Ollie just came in soaking wet and is like shaking off on all the cats on the bed.
It's like a
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
foot war.
Ollie is the dog who doesn't
Yeah.
give a shit what these cats think
No,
for
no.
listeners at home.
Yeah.
So
And he's
good for
making this
him.
weird noise where he's like licking his paws, going like,
because it's soaking wet from the rain, so it's
Sure. All
okay.
right, cool.
But we're with you.
Dig it. So as Jupiter moves into Gemini, so this is an important situation throughout the year, I think. So Jupiter changes signs every 12 to 13 months or so. And so Jupiter is moving into Gemini from Taurus. Jupiter's been in Taurus for about a year at this point and has been hanging out with Uranus there. There's actually going to be a conjunction to, they've been sort of like flirting with each other for a little while, and they're finally going to get together at the end of April. And then, so do you want to say a thing or two about that before I get into Jupiter and Gemini here?
Well, that's liable to be a lot of fun, I would say. There, this looks like big disruptions in food. You know,
Sure.
we've got like the Uranus is like disruptions. It's things happening that you unexpected
Instability.
instability. Jupiter's expansion, big stuff. Taurus is food was one of the things. So that's what it looks like to me. That's like the easy keyword combination. But do you have any insight into that,
Well, I think that so labor has been a real issue, sticking point for Uranus and Taurus this go around. It's been there's been a lot of questions around how much and just like volatility in the marketplace in general. So how much cost is involved in producing certain things, and how do prices reflect that? And what constitutes fairness and all of this kind of stuff. Look, that has been wildly contested under Uranus and Taurus. And so we saw that all throughout Uranus and Taurus square to Saturn and Aquarius. And there's more and more of that kind of brewing all the time. And so Jupiter, Uranus, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of momentary. Like, I don't actually think that the Jupiter Uranus conjunction is that outstanding as a point. Like big disruptions, like sure. Are like what does a big disruption even mean at this point in time? You know what I mean? Like we are past normal. Normal has left the building.
Right.
So
This could be like a of like little bit of like massive, what's it called? Inflation, like just a little bit of hyperinflation.
Sure.
You know, we can get some a little bit
A
of
little bit
hyperinflation.
of hyperinflation in that inflation.
Yeah, right. In the overall arc of inflation.
Yeah. So I would think that maybe some like market stuff is going to go wild at that time and will be interesting to look at, I think. But, like I think more interesting than that is what Uranus is up to after Jupiter leaves, because it's just Uranus without a bunch of interference from other planets. Because we had seen the Saturn in Aquarius square to Uranus and Taurus, and so that was sort of like keeping Uranus in bounds. And even though that was like deeply challenging to the Saturn thing, Saturn was in really strong position in that moment and was able to keep that Uranus in there. And then Jupiter is like saying yes to all the Uranus things while Uranus is there in Taurus. But then as we see a departure from that, then it's just like Uranus is just kind of hanging out there in Taurus. And You know, so then once Pluto's in Aquarius and Uranus is in Taurus, then every time a planet moves through a fixed sign, then they're going to start out with a hard aspect to Pluto and then move into a hard aspect with Uranus. And so that looks very surprising and weird for a month at a time or whatever, you know. So like, I think that that's really where the interesting tea is for the next like couple of years or whatever. But then as we see, oh, you look like you have something to say to that. Okay.
No. Yeah, I think that's a good analysis, basically. Yeah.
Word up. But moving into Jupiter in Gemini, then I think that, so Jupiter rules Sagittarius, which is opposite to Gemini. And so this puts Jupiter into a position where Jupiter is not super comfortable. This is a position where Jupiter is like not really able to do the Jupiter things super easily. You run into trouble trying to do the Jupiter stuff. This is a Mercury ruled sign. So where Jupiter is big and expansive and wants to talk about all the stuff and how, and all the philosophy, and it's all so big and abundant and luck and joy and all that sort of stuff, prophecy. Gemini, which is a Mercury ruled sign, tends to dissect things, tends to look at the minute aspects of things, tries to sort facts into intelligible information, right? And so there's a lot of this kind of like breaking things down in a way that Jupiter tends to want to look at the big picture. You know, Jupiter wants to look at the forest, Mercury wants to look at the trees, right? Or even smaller than that. And so as Jupiter moves into Gemini, then there's like a little bit of trouble there for the Jupiter things. Then we can also notice that Jupiter in Gemini is going to start to make a square to Saturn in Pisces. And so this is too cute. This is way cuter than Jupiter square Saturn is.
a little pup is starting to squeak.
I think that this is an important commentary on good medicine for difficult times. A nose boop, I think, is on time. So we should definitely boop the nose throughout 2024, as many boops as you like. Yeah. Jupiter square Saturn. So Jupiter and Gemini already having a bit of a rough time, square to Saturn in Pisces. So Saturn is that wall, difficulty, obstacle, this kind of thing. Now we do see that Pisces is ruled by Jupiter, so there's a bit of reception there, but also Saturn in Pisces ruled by Jupiter in detriment. This is a Saturn that is ruled by, like, that just looks like more discomfort for Saturn. I don't feel like Saturn is super down for Pisces in the first place.
No.
Because it's a mutable sign. It's like, you know, there's a kind of darkness and weight to Pisces and oceanic Pisces that Saturn can vibe with, but it's very changing in a way that Saturn gets tired of. And yeah. So I don't
undefined.
Necessarily,
you know, it's like
undefined.
Very
undefined. Yeah.
Saturn likes things very, very well defined.
Right. And Saturn is getting closer and closer to that Neptune as well there at the end of Pisces. And then it's going to conjoin, is going to do the same move as things have been doing from Capricorn into Aquarius, like conjoining at the very end of Capricorn and then conjoining still at the very beginning of Aquarius. Saturn is going to do that move with Neptune from Pisces into Aries. And that's 24 into 2025, like you were talking about before. So Saturn is becoming more and more uncomfortable at doing the Saturn things, right? So whereas before, for 5 years, we had Saturn in Capricorn followed by Saturn in Aquarius, a super strong Saturn energy. Like Saturn was there for you if you needed it, if you wanted to double down on your discipline or your responsibilities or your regularity, your habits, your routines, like this kind of thing. That was there for you.
Around the whole country, you can easily do that.
You can do that, right. If that's what your goal is, if you want to construct at home prisons, you got this, dog. Follow your heart, right? Now, it looks a little unruly, when it comes to that sort of thing. Saturn is not able to do the Saturn things as well as Saturn might like to do. This is interesting to note at the same time that we've got these challenges to authority going on, right? And so we can notice that those eclipses that happen, the solar eclipse that we just talked about, for example, in Aries, which is, you know, the autocrat finding some difficulty or something like that, right? So while that's happening, then the rule of law, the iron curtain, the iron fist, like this kind of thing, this is becoming less and less actually plausible throughout the time that this is going on. So, you know, and then Jupiter and Gemini, is they're making that trine to Pluto and Aquarius, you know, ramping up the robot information network and all of that sort of stuff, right? And so robot information network, you know, it's easy to look at the horror of that and be like, oh no, the surveillance state and whatever else, right? But part of the thing is that the autocrat doesn't know how to deal with that any more than you do. It's new for everyone. And so hackers get just as much power as cops do.
Yeah.
If not more.
I think that's one of the really important points of information that maybe isn't talked about as much. It's so obvious. You know, like, if everything's digital, how easy is everything to get hacked? You know, it's just so easy to screw it up if you know what you're doing. And I don't, but there are people who do, and
right,
they don't necessarily have the same interests as the government of the United States of America or any other government. So
sure. And I don't think that this is necessarily more comfortable for the individual consumer, you know, like this is, you know, like get a fucking password manager, you know, like this kind of thing. Like, this is very important in this moment. Because it's going to be easy to steal your credit card information and whatever else, you know, like I've already had my identity stolen at least one time. And so this is like a whole vibe here. So while it's not good for the autocrat, it's probably not good for the individual consumer either. There's a kind of like wild confusion and uncertainty that's going on here throughout all this. And Jupiter isn't really in position to help. In Gemini. Yeah.
He's like bogged down by all this like data and all these words. It's like big data. It's like too much data to even sift through and make definitions of, you know, and that's like, see that kind of as like that, the Gemini and the Pisces and the Aquarius. I mean, it's like all the stuff that's happening in those signs is a lot to do with like, with that dynamic of too much data and not being able to make the definitions and see what's important and what's not important and what's false, what's true and what's false. Like even that thing, like we're don't even know totally. That.
Yeah. So two things there. One is that one of my favorite Jupiter and Gemini images is the master of none, right? Jack of all trades, master of none. And so It's the too much information. It's the analysis paralysis, right? I've got so much information going on here that I don't, and I could go in a lot of directions, or the master of none. I've got a lot of talent. I can do lots of other things with a certain amount of facility, and they aren't necessarily related to each other. And so then what do I decide to go on and specialize in? Well, like, I don't know, I like this thing kind of, but like I also like this other thing, right? And so there's a kind of paralysis that can come with that that can be difficult sometimes. So, and I see that come up in with clients all the time, especially those who have, that's Jupiter. Jupiter is in rulership in the first decan of Gemini. And so even though Jupiter is in detriment in all of Gemini, there's a, in that first 10 degrees, there's a kind of like special ability to have that kind of like master of none or jack of all trades sort of situation that then can lead to this kind of paralysis analysis and this kind of thing. So especially as we're in the information landscape that we're in now with the robot information and what's true and what's false and all of this sort of thing, then one thing that I'm actually looking forward to with Jupiter and Gemini that I think can be really helpful is drilling down into epistemology, like what are the methods by which we ascertain truth? How do we come to know the things that we know? And so there's a moment, there's a cultural moment going on right now where we are sort of not understanding or not really vibing with all the sort of conventional wisdom or conventional knowledge about things, and sort of thinking about other ways to go about, like conventional medicine is a good idea, right? So like, and so there's this idea of like, oh, well, maybe there are other traditions that we could look at, or maybe there are other ways to do things, or this kind of thing, right? So with all that going on, then I think Jupiter in Gemini, if Gemini's job is, or if Gemini is the space where you sort of like dissect and get down into the nitty gritty and see the little pieces of all the things, and it's Jupiter's job to create an understanding of the whole, then I think Jupiter in Gemini has a really good opportunity here to get down into those weeds around what even am truth. What does it mean for something to be true before I even try to look at the statistics of how many dead are in Ukraine or Gaza or whatever, or any of that sort of stuff, before trying to decide if that's true. It's better to understand what even am true in the first place. And so then from there, moving forward into maybe like in an inductive sort of style, coming to understand the whatever information comes at you through the lens of a more palatable or more solid truth, understanding of truth, something like this.
Yeah. And what even am truth on the relative plane is, sure. can you even be certain of anything in this world? I personally don't believe so.
Sure. Well, Ursula Le Guin said, all truth is local.
Ah, mm-hmm.
If we're quoting Ursula Le Guin, which we should do further, don't listen to me at all. Listen to Ursula Le Guin forever.
All truth is local, yes. And it's also like, I mean, the only thing that I know for certain is that somehow I exist. And even
I think, therefore I am.
Well, I am, therefore I think. There's something that it is. I'm not, you know, that's me, but, you know, and that's kind of like where we get into like the tradition of spirituality that I'm focused on, self-inquiry and so on. It's like, you know, inquiring into like, what do you actually know for sure? What actually are you? And it's, I haven't come to a conclusion yet, but except for the fact that truth on the relative plane is it's a gamble.
Certainly. Well, one of the things that I think Jupiter in Gemini can potentially offer is the idea that if all truth is local, then really what we're looking at is issues of scale.
Uh-huh.
So we're probably not going to arrive at a universal truth, which is true for me the same way that it's true for someone in Gaza, for example, the way that it's true for someone in Alpha Centauri or whatever else. Like the further you zoom out, the less relevant your own personal truth becomes, right? And the more you zoom in, the more relevant your own personal local truth becomes. And so...
Yeah, and the more you can actually verify with firsthand experience. I think that is really the crucial thing. It's like at this point in time with deep fakes, with all these sorts of things, it's impossible to really verify for yourself what is true, except for what you experience directly.
Yeah. And so Jupiter's job is to look at the whole. And Gemini is a space where we look at the tiny. And so there's a relationship between scale there that I think is an important line of inquiry to develop over this time. Not because I know what the truth is, but because I think that if we inquire in that direction under Jupiter and Gemini, I think we stand to learn something.
Yeah. And I was just looking at the first decan of Gemini. ruled by Jupiter in Picatrix, Book 2, Chapter 11. And it's a beautiful woman, a mistress of sowing, with her ascends two calves and two horses. And this is the face of the art of the scribe, of reckoning, of number, of giving and receiving, and of the sciences. And so for me, I'm seeing like Jupiter is big picture, Gemini is small picture, right? And this is the first face of Gemini can be the place where you have some of the big picture as well as the small picture potentially too, if you're, that's the possibility, you know, or
there's a certain amount of duality there as well with the two calves and the two horses, right? So there's the two sides of the thing that you're going to want to pay attention to. You're going to want to be able to see what is happening here and how does it look on the yin side? How does it look on the yang side? And what can, because you never get a thing without yin and yang elements, right? So you got to look at the iterations and then be like, okay, so what is the thing in the middle there? What's the true essence? You have to like kind of suss that out. And so I think that that's something that we are likely to be strongly engaged in for Jupiter and Gemini's time.
Yeah, definitely. So we are not, we're taking our time with this astral weather. I think we've gone like some of the big moments in 2024, but what else, what are the other big moments in 2024 that we definitely want to talk about before we zero in on the winter quarter?
Yeah, sure. So Mars is gonna then move into Gemini not so long after that. And then Mars is going to conjoin Jupiter there in Gemini. And so this is going to be a square to that Mars-Saturn conjunction that happened in Pisces. And it's going to be Mars with Jupiter in Gemini. So whenever we think about Mars with Jupiter, then typically that comes out as Jupiter, whose job is to affirm or confirm or say yes to something. Jupiter is going to say yes to Mars. And so Mars is going to be like, oh, what if we blew up all the walls, right? I'm fighting with Saturn here. Yeah. And so.
And Gemini is cities. Gemini is also cities. And Mars plus Jupiter is big war. So, you know, that's also potential for like war in cities on period. Just like symbolically.
Yeah. Doesn't look good as far as like, so this comes back to the whole like Mars is kind of a premier player throughout 2024, and so that seems to me like a pretty big deal. And at that same time that happens, and Mercury is retrograde in Aries as well, and we've got Chiron there in Aries, and we've got the North Node there in Aries, so we're looking at big feelings and you know, echoes of the eclipse stuff that's going on there. So it just looks like a really good time for usurping power or something like this. So then moving forward a little bit further, moving into September, then we can see that Pluto is going to move back into Capricorn. So we've done this whole like Pluto retrograde station and all this, and like so like hanging out a lot at that 0 degrees of Aquarius, moving back into Capricorn. Now that is important because after Mars is in Gemini, then Mars is going to move into Cancer, and there in Cancer we're going to see Mars opposite to Pluto. So this is another installment in our Pluto, Mars Pluto saga here. And then at the end of the year, then once Mars gets into Leo, Mars is slowing down, going to station retrograde in Leo and then move back in order to ultimately, and this is moving into 2025 here, but Mars is going to oppose that Pluto three times. The first time will be in Capricorn, and then two in Leo and Aquarius. So it's a lot. It's a lot of Mars Pluto, and Mars retrograde is famously the grumpiest Mars around. So
yeah, so big Mars year.
Big Mars year. A very big Mars year. Yeah, for sure. So for at home types, there's a good year to do your Mars things. lift something heavy, maybe.
Yeah.
Sweat it out.
Mm-hmm. Get projects done. Yeah.
Run.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and then I think we're going to try to do some quarterlies this year, every equinox and solstice and equinox, and we'll get more in depth into each of these seasons as we come to them. But right now you want to just do like a little deep dive and magnify what's happening for the next, this upcoming winter season from.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
So we talked already about the Mercury Mars that's going to start us out, right? We start out with Mercury Mars in Sagittarius. I noticed that we've also got Venus there in Sagittarius square to Saturn in Pisces right there at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I don't feel like Venus is a super major player this year. Venus is, you know, there's no retrograde. Venus is just kind of hanging out. This is kind of part of the problem that we see with all this Mars stuff is that it's not really counterbalanced with too much benefic stuff. The benefics are, so, you know, we love to see Jupiter doing Jupiter things, but Jupiter is like kind of disrupted by Uranus while in Taurus and then moves into Gemini and is in detriment square to Saturn. So that's a lot of difficulty for Jupiter to overcome in order to bring you the joy, luck, abundance sort of stuff that you want, right? Then if we're thinking about the other benefic, then Venus's job is to bring you things that taste good and things that feel good and smell good and cooperation and cohesion and unity and all of this kind of stuff, right? But so Mars or Venus is in Sagittarius with Mercury and Mars, and then in Capricorn with Mercury and Mars, and then is going to like move into Aquarius and is going to hang out with Pluto for a second and then do Mercury Mars things. And then we get Venus moving into Pisces, and we love to see Venus in Pisces. Venus is exalted in Pisces with Saturn. So
yeah.
Right. It's just rough a little bit, you know? And that, so Venus isn't having too much fun here.
One thing that I would like to point out is that Saturn is in the beginning of Pisces, hanging out in the first decan of Pisces mostly. Mm-hmm. And so there is,
although
like
he'll make it up to 19 degrees of Pisces this year.
Yeah.
Or jaunt.
But Venus, you know, she's still co-present with Saturn, but she will be able to have a little bit of time at the end of the sign where she's free. She's past his influence. I mean, still, like, you know, and it's looking at it from whole sign perspective versus mm-hmm. like I look at the actual like application and separation of the conjunctions mm-hmm. and aspects. So there's, you know, it's like more or less defined depending on how if you want to look at the application and separation or just like the co-presence. But there should be a little bit of good nice Venus time in Pisces.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm kind of painting an apocalyptic picture here, but like, Snoop booping is still going to go on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. there's lots of nice stuff. Like, people are still going to eat sweet things, and people are still going to hug each other, and all the rest of this, right? And especially as people get, you know, there was the Chris Brennan, Austin Coppock, and Kelly Surtees made that famous no hugging in March 2020 prediction, right?
Yeah.
Which was right on point. We love that. But that was when Saturn was really strong. That was when an authority figure could be like, no hugging. And people would be like, okay, I guess we don't hug anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if somebody tries to say that in this moment of like autocrat trying to grab for power, then, and it's like no hugging, then like, I don't know that it's going to take the same way. That's, you know what I mean?
Interesting. Yeah.
And so, there's definitely an opportunity here to notice that radical presence that like there, I, you know, maybe the wars are going on and all this, but like, you know, Percy has a little snoot and maybe I should boop him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me get him real quick.
There you go. There he is. There he is. Boop. There he is. Oh, love it. Boop it. Boop.
This also might be a good time to create some art. You know, while Venus is in Pisces.
Sure. And Saturn in Pisces is really good for art too.
Yeah.
A lot of really great hip hop comes out at that time. Southern Playlist, Cadillac Music, for example, this kind of thing.
And maybe even like traditional art too is a way to like move with the Saturn.
Sure.
Some other things that there are ways to work with this situation too. Yeah.
There's always ways to work with it. This is not the first time that things have felt apocalyptic in the world. This is not the first time that we have experienced terrible wars or, you know, famine or any of that sort of stuff, right? Like these are things that humans have lived through, that you have ancestors who have survived these kinds of things. And so this is a good moment to remember that even in the midst of all of those kinds of things, there are lots of things that we can do. And leaning into arts and creativity or the enjoyment of other people's art and this kind of thing. We live in a moment where if we're in the information age, then one of the best things about the information age is the ability to disseminate art widely and cheaply, right? Like, so I, for example, created 10 songs in the past year, and they're all freely available on the internet. If you have access to YouTube or Spotify or whatever, and like you'll have to go through some ads or whatever, but like if you don't have an account, but you can do that and you can just listen to the music for free or whatever, right? And this is something that was not possible the last time that Saturn was in Pisces in the 90s. And so this is a good moment to remember that we actually do have a lot of access here also.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point about the ancestors, because the thing you think about with all the war and like in the United States, we have had these decades of peace for people living in the United States, for the most part, unprecedented in a lot of ways, amount of peace and resources we've had available. And we're a little soft, I would say, you know, because war and famine, like these have been part of the human condition, you know, for as long as, well, maybe not, definitely as long as there's been civilization, there's been war and famine. But even as hunter-gatherers, there have been lean times and fat times. But the point that you raise up about your ancestors, I think, is very important. All of us have ancestors who have been through very difficult times. And when we're going through difficult times, that's something that we can always do is lean into our ancestors and ask them to help us out, because they live in us. They live inside of our, in our blood, in our body. They are here with us at all times. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I often like to do as well is in prayer and ceremony and this kind of thing is to not only invoke the ancestors and give thanks to them for the strength that they provide, but then also to call on the descendants, you know, who they live in the world that comes after this one. And so if we can call on them to pull us into the kind of world that they want to live in, then I think that's a good way to relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't have to necessarily even be your blood descendants, you know?
Sure.
It can be the people who inhabit the new world. I mean, and everybody has a certain effect on the world. I mean, it could even be you in another reincarnation and so on.
Could be.
But I really like that idea of asking the future, the people who live in the future world too, and respecting them and honoring them. And then also maybe can help when you're making your own decisions and taking action in this world. What is the kind of world that you want to leave, leave those people who will inhabit it long after you're gone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Having a certain presence of mind of, we live in this present, which is necessarily after the past and before the future. And so just remembering where we are relationally is maybe a good way to feel a little less isolated.
Yeah. And I think that's also really important too, in terms of like what you mentioned about, we've lived through times that have felt apocalyptic. There have been many apocalypses in the past, and there have been many times that have felt apocalyptic. And I think that's one of the things that people right now who are overly focusing on the apocalypse are doing is psychologically is like, if there's just going to be this, if we're all going to be dead in 50 years or whatever, then it doesn't matter what we do now. But I think if anything that history has shown us is that humans are adaptable and we need to live as if, even if everyone is dead in 50 years, which I highly doubt, there are always other beings, and living as if there will be, living with the people inhabiting the world, and those people could be humans, could be non-humans, as if they're important and they matter, and that the world that they will inhabit matters. Yeah, that bringing that into your consciousness is very important, and not just like Jesus is going to come back and the world is going to be destroyed, or the world will be uninhabitable from climate change or whatever it is. Like that is a way of rejecting your agency and rejecting, you know. Yeah, so that's just a little sermon there or diatribe. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's it's likely worth investigating what it means to matter.
Yeah.
You know, like if we're all going to be dead in 50 years, then nothing matters, right? And so it's like, well, so in the first place, is death the end?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so like, so which that's not something that I would necessarily subscribe to. And so if death isn't an ending place, you know, it's an ending, but like, you know, what else might be going on here than like, well, maybe some things matter relative to, you know, like, and that was a thought that kept me from suicide a lot of times, was that I could do that, but then there might be some consequences after death that I would have to navigate that might suck more, even more than this does. Exactly. And so that was something I was like, okay, well, I gotta like get my affairs in order before I do all that, you know. So
yeah, what is the world that you, if you reincarnate in 50 years, what is the world that you want to reincarnate into?
Or, sure,
you know, so it's not even just like your descendants, mm-hmm. or the what other animals and plants that are will be living in 50, 100 years. I mean, hopefully we'll all still be living in 50 years, but like what,
right. Yeah.
Like if reincarnation is real, what is the world that you're going to be inhabiting, you know, and what you want to be inhabiting? So
sure. And even if it's not, even if you're only in the spiritual domain or whatever, you know what I mean? Like I pray to grandparents and ancestors and that sort of stuff, right? Like I still have a feeling of their being present, whether or not they are incarnate, whether or not they are in a meat suit the same way that I am. Mm-hmm. So there's just like, there might be more to it that might be worth, you know, like taking into account when understanding what is and is not right action. And that, you know, so just thinking with that idea a little bit might, you know, because as I said before, I don't fucking know. I'm not the guy. But if we can just think a little bit about it, then maybe we can learn something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Really good point. So yeah.
So
yeah. What else do you have to look forward to in this winter?
Well, I actually think that the Aquarius stuff is going to be pretty good for that sort of inquiry, because we'll see a Mars Pluto in Aquarius, right? And so Mars Pluto in Aquarius, or just Mars Pluto, you know, like there's like school shooter vibes with Mars Pluto a lot of times, right? Like the sort of like mass destruction that comes from a deeply warped emotional place, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's really good for being like, what even matters in the world, right? And so that might be a good place to start. But then there's also Venus is going to move into Aquarius and is going to conjoin that Pluto as well. And so as we've got Venus moving into Aquarius, and so Mars Pluto is on the 13th of February, and then Venus Pluto is on the 16th of February, so it's like one right after the next. And so I think that looks really good for inquiry into the deep and maybe finding some kind of, you know, Venus is about harmony and coming together and like finding, like whenever I think about Venus, like Venus, Pluto, whenever I read that for clients, then sometimes things like jealousy or obsession will come up or this kind of thing, or a penchant for danger, right? Like a sense of like, this is terrible and dangerous, and I also kind of love it. You know, like that kind of thing can show up a lot of times with Venus and Pluto. And so I wonder if there might be some kind of like a way of associating what is delicious with what is dangerous in some kind of way. And that's interesting because a little bit later on the 21st, then we're going to get Venus Mars conjunction at 6 degrees of Aquarius. So we're still there in the first decan of Aquarius, still thinking like new Aquarius thoughts, and then doing Venus Mars there at the same time. So Venus Mars, I often think of as being like very magnetic and very attractive and like dynamic. There's something that like really is powerfully moving about that kind of situation. Also, not for nothing, that is square to Jupiter in Taurus as well. And so that looks like it wants to sort of push something new forward. And maybe that, you know, that Mars is still there. And so maybe it's going to be like new fancy war equipment or something like that. And certainly will be in some places and in some sectors. But also, Mars does a lot of things that aren't necessarily warring, or even the warring that Mars does can sometimes be beneficial. And so seeing that Mars in Aquarius flanked by Venus on one side and Jupiter on the other, that looks like sort of best case scenario for that Mars. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't, that seems like something interesting to look at and look into, and looks like there's a lot of potential underneath it.
And that's in February, you said?
That's in February. Yeah. So February 13th is Mars moving into Aquarius. That's the Mars Pluto. February 16th is Venus Pluto. And then February 21st is Venus Mars at 6 degrees, which is pretty closely squared to Jupiter.
We have a kinky Valentine's Day is the.
Yeah, big kinks. Like, might hurt a little bit. I hope you're into that.
And I guess I would maybe a little bit dangerous mm-hmm. Valentine's Day. I mean, actually, that's like, I don't know. I would be a little worried about that time period and like going on dates or anything. I don't know, the Pluto and Mars with Venus, that's scary. That's like actually scary.
it's a good time to catch your lover on some bullshit and lie, like, who is that texting you while we out here in this moment, like we supposed to be together, and you you in his DMs, you know, like it definitely looks like it could get weird in that moment for sure.
Okay. So yeah, so we've got February, and then what's going on in March?
Well, so one more thing in February is that there's a Mercury Kazemi at the very end of February on the 28th of February, which is like also
a Saturn.
Huh? Saturn. Saturn is also there at 9 degrees of Pisces.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. That's definitely an interesting situation.
Mm-hmm.
Saturn, Sun, and Mercury all in the same degree.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is, you don't see this very often. You don't see a lot of Kazemis or any three planet conjunctions all in the same degree like that. Like very rare to see this sort of situation going on. So, you know, Pisces, none of these planets really like Pisces that much.
Right.
So everyone's kind of uncomfortable. Mercury is in detriment. Mercury's in fall. Mercury is not, and not only is Mercury in detriment and fall, but also closely conjunct Saturn. This looks like a very good day to fumble your words. Like, have something very important that you want to say and then just can't get it out. Can't figure out how to say the thing. It looks kind of like it wants to be, maybe you say the thing and you think that you said it, and then it gets wildly misinterpreted or something like that. It's like maybe gets taken out of context, or maybe your wording could have been understood in a way that you like did not mean. And then, you know, like shout out to the Oxford comma. Say what?
So we just like shouldn't book a podcast interview for February 28th.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, now that you've said that, without a doubt, your guest is going to be like, oh, that's the only day that I have available. So
I'm going to block it off of my calendar.
Well, so Mars and Sun and Mercury together in yogas is a, like a, it's a scholar. It's a scholar combination. Not a Buddha. Buddha isn't like mind, like Buddhitya. Mm. It's so it's like Buddha is also the name for Mercury.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So it's Mercury Sun, and that's like a scholar kind of thing. And then Saturn in there. Saturn in the Sun is like a revel, like a anti-authoritarian type of like problems with authority. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And but the Sun is in charge of both of them because. The sun eclipses both of them, right? So the sun, the sun is kind of like in a way destroying Mercury and Saturn, and they're giving their power to him. But that could be a good day to talk to somebody who is a specialist in a very traditional scholar, you know, like in some like ancient knowledge. That could be a good thing to do with that combination potentially.
Yeah. I don't think that I would want to schedule a public conversation at that time, but I do think that that would be a good time to learn something, to discuss something difficult and confusing with someone who is willing to take that trip with you and who might, you know, someone who's going to have some grace for you if you say the thing that you're not supposed to say. In an attempt to, like, Pisces is very messy, right? And so sometimes in order to clean a mess up, you have to make it messier first, right? You have to like pour all the stuff out in order to sort it or something like this, right? And so this seems like that kind of energy where it seems really good for working it out and learning something deep and important about the very nature of the cosmos or something like this. But it looks like you might have to get a little messy in that process. And so I would maybe be a little wary of public conversation or things that could be cropped and taken out of context or something like this.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. It's a good thing to note. Okay. So then, and we have a February 28th. Is there a February 29th this year too?
There is. Yeah. It's a leap year this year.
Right, so we got 366 days this year.
We do.
We're going into March. What do we have in March? Anything really of note?
Well, so we got Venus and Mars are going to be in Aquarius at that time, making a square to Uranus in Taurus. So this looks like it wants to sort of inflame the Uranus things. Venus rules Taurus, and so it's going to be making a square with reception. So that looks pretty good. Like it wants to support the Uranus things. Uranus wants to disrupt things or to bring unexpected surprises and changes and shifts that, you know, the lightning bolt that shifts everything in some kind of way. So, and then you add Mars in a couple of days. So the Venus square is on the 3rd of March, and then the Mars square is on the 9th of March. So about a week later. And that looks, so Mars Uranus, you know, wants to blow stuff up in an unexpected way or something like this, you know. So that, while Uranus is so strongly supported, to me this looks a little bit like your Uranus people, your rebels, your, I don't know, labor unions or something like that, they like all get together and they're like, yeah, let's fucking do it, and then they shoot in a week, you know, like they get together and then they're like, we're gonna break the shit, and then they do. So it looks like a major disruption that wants to take place around that time. So for this looks like good skies for rabble rousers, I would say.
Okay.
It's like protests and, you know, labor unions and like social disruption. If you're trying to plan some sort of big disruption project, shoot for around this Mars Uranus time.
Yeah, well, so especially because also at that time, the sun is still in Pisces. And so the sun is still outshining Saturn. Saturn is under the beams of the sun at that point. So Saturn, whose job is to regulate rules and laws and boundaries and this kind of thing, is not in position to do strong Saturn things there. And so it looks like there are chinks in the armor. There's cracks in the walls that can be exploited.
Very good.
Okay. Well, I think that's a pretty good forecast. We've looked at the high points of 2024, gone a little bit more into detail of the winter season, and I'm excited for the spring quarter forecast that we're going to do, and we get to talk more in depth about that eclipse and what else is happening in the spring season. But Zamboni, it's been wonderful to have you on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a delight to talk to you guys every time. Super, super appreciate you and what you do out in the world. I hope that you continue to be the baddest. And so if folks like what I do here, then you can check out zambonifunk.com. You can go and get a reading there. There's music there to check out. You can join the Patreon, which is where there's an electional report. And so I look at times when things look pretty good in the sky and give you dates and times when you can launch your product, your business, your relationship, these kinds of things. Also times to avoid. So that is in the electional report that is available on Patreon. Also, all of my lectures are available on Patreon in that same spot. You can also catch some merch at zambonifunk.com. There's some pretty cool shit in there. You can get, this is the cover to my music. So there's a microphone in the way, but so that's the cover to some music. And there's a bunch of those. There's maybe four of those, five maybe.
Album art and your sweatshirts they're awesome.
Yeah. I like them a lot. So those are all available at zambonifunk.com. And yeah, I would love to hear from the plant cunning community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again, Zamboni.
Yeah.
Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Cheers. Boop.